It's Thursday night. That means it's time for Illegal Shift. Tonight, an unusual episode as we take a deep dive into a case that you know about. But how much do you know? And how much would one man do to avoid going to prison for the rest of his life? You're going to find out a deep dive on the case of what really happened with Ray Lewis. Is he a murderer? I'll let you decide.
The growing calls across the nation to defund the
foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Illegal shift on the kicking team. That penalty is refused. First down.
Guns up, pity up, Wolfpack. It's failure to stop's illegal shift. This is the Thursday night show where first responders talk to you about everything that's going on in sports this week. We're kind of taking a detour from what we normally talk about. Although there is plenty going on in NFL free agency, none of which has to do with the Dallas Cowboys. So that's why I'm free this week to be doing a deep dive into what is going on with Ray Lewis. Before we get started, just a reminder, Failure Stops, the number one podcast and platform where we go to entertain and inform first responders. I'm John. I'm an M1 dispatcher. I'm joined as always by Chief Jason Kiefer. He's boys blurring out. Good thing this is an audio production.
Can't tell how blurry it is. Weird.
There's probably not enough light in your room. Your aperture is probably opening and closing, attempting to capture you. So turn on a light. I prefer you blurry. So if you don't want to do anything, that's fine. Well, you're handsome, man. Either way, I just have my preference. Thanks everybody for joining us tonight. We're going to talk about a case that goes way back. It's hard to believe that it was 24 years ago. Just after Super 34 in Atlanta, the case of Ray Lewis. Everybody feels like Ray Lewis definitely killed somebody. All the jokes, whether it's Norm MacDonald or the guy from The Daily Show, Jon Stewart, they've all got jokes about how, hey, you know, Ray Lewis killed a guy. It's a story that is almost as long ago as O.J. Simpson. It's far less infamous. But people generally do have the opinion that Ray Lewis got away with murder. So I've been researching this case harder than any other case I've ever researched because there's not a lot of information that's easy to find out there. You go, you know, to your usual sources, the Wikipedia and all this, and it just doesn't have a lot of information. So I've had to go to a lot of rabbit holes to find out what's going on with Ray Lewis. But before we get into it, Jason, I'm with your permission, as always, I'll go ahead and do some ad reads.
Let's do that. Let's knock that out of the way.
Yeah, let's pay the bills so that we can avoid entering into some temporary slavery. Folks, the show's brought to you by GhostBed. Go over to GhostBed.com, use the offer code Wolfpack. You could save like 40% or 50% or some ridiculous amount of money. As a first responder and as a listener of Failure to Stop, you can go to GhostBed.com. You can find everything that they have there, whether it's their adjustable mattresses, their adjustable frames, their anti-gravity mattresses, their pillows, their sheets. They've got all kinds of great stuff over there that's going to help you get a good night's sleep. Like I said, as a listener of Failure to Stop, you can use the offer code Wolfpack. You do not have to be a first responder, but we appreciate you if you are a first responder and you're listening to the show. GhostBed appreciates you as a first responder or as a veteran. They even appreciate you or if you are just a mere firefighter. I appreciate you, but less so if you are a fighter. We love GhostBed, of course, because they're the only mattress in the United States that's made in the good old USA. USA. USA.
USA. You're terrible. All right.
That was anemic. You know, I was driving to work today, and I realized I've probably appeared in more episodes of Failure to Stop than Mike the Cop. I'm getting close. If he appeared in one episode per week, I'm about to beat him out in terms of number of weeks that I have worked for Failure to Stop.
That's a good accolade to have.
That's weird is what it is. It's weird to think that like, and just in terms of watch hours, I might have been on this network longer than him. I don't know. I have to go do some math and like go back to my Excel spreadsheet and like see which episodes he was in and which ones I'm in. But folks, the show is also brought to you by Factor Meals. We love Factor Meals because they send food to your house reverse trick or treat style. We all love food. Don't even lie. Jason, you love food. I've seen you eat food before. You can have food delivered right to your house in this busy and hectic world. Why go out? Why face the gauntlet of traffic when you're getting off from your job as a first responder? Why go out there into the public and deal with more madness and more mess? You're trying to run the gauntlet to get another can of Van de Kamp's beans, which doesn't even have any vitamins in it. Go over to Factor Meals. They'll deliver food right to your door. This is fresh, It's not frozen. It's refrigerated. You can throw it in the microwave for 2 minutes. You'll have a fresh meal, just like what mom used to make. Tastes delicious. I've had Factor meals. I highly recommend it. If you're doing meal prep, meal planning, Factor meals is going to help you meet whatever your diet goals are, because you can not eat on a whim. You can be smart, sit down, look at the Factor meals website, decide how many meals you want delivered to your house every week. If you're going vegetarian, if you're going to be carb conscious, if you want to do keto, have high fats, if you're going to protein load because you're going to go out and lift weight like me, go do whatever you're going to do and set it up with Factor meals. As I've said, Jason, there's 300 options, and if you want to buy all 300 and have them all delivered in 1 week, Factor meals will accommodate you. And if you want to massively overeat, Factor meals is happy to take your funds for that. You can use the code WOLFPACK50 to start. You can save 50% off. We appreciate that. And of course, there's the wellness company. Use the offer code WOLFPACK. You can save, I believe, 10% over there. Own your wellness, own your health, own your freedom with the wellness company. Get well and stay well with solutions that are designed by top doctors. They have all kinds of natural supplements to help you with immune support, daily essentials for your mind and body, digestion, metabolism, all the stuff that you can get over the counter, but this way you could have it delivered to your house, things like melatonin, things to help you sleep. They also have prescription meds like antibiotics, which you're going to want to stock up on before the next Civil War, the next World War III, or whatever it is that's happening. Medical kits, first aid kits, contagion kits. You can go over there and get a membership. Free yourself from Big Pharma with the Wellness Company. You can get 10% off using the offer code WOLFPACK. We appreciate them supporting Failure to Stop as always. And then, of course, final sponsor is CountyCom. What is CountyCom, Jason?
It's a good question because I don't know.
You don't know what they are, but I'll tell you, CountyCom has everything you need to prepare, explore, and survive. After you're done having your food delivered to you by Factor Meals, and after you have all the medicine that you need to survive thanks to the Wellness Company, this is the last thing you need. CountyCom is going to bring you everything that you need for your everyday carry. Powerful flashlights, utility knives, multi-tools, camping tools, radios, mechanical watches, compasses, lighters, fire starter kits, bags, pouches, capsules, wallets. If you needed to survive when you're roughing it, you just don't want to be caught unprepared in your daily life, you will find it at CountyCom. You can trust them. They've been in business over 30 years. They offer fast returns and exchanges. You can get free domestic shipping on orders over $125. Special deals and awesome rewards program at their website. So go over there or check them out on Instagram, CountyCom_gov, or go to the website, CountyCom.com. You can get awesome deals and products there. Jason, everybody likes to be the prepared guy. Don't you like being that guy?
I try to be as prepared as I can.
Now, you hate it when you're in a situation, particularly if there's a woman there and they need something like, oh, we need to find True North, or we need to be able to break into this lock, or we need, you know, an exact tool for this exact situation. They always look on, you know, not to be sexist, but they always look at the man. They always want you to be prepared. Don't let them down. Don't let the other men down. Show up the other men. Be prepared. You can do that with CountyCom. Go over there, like I said, everything for your everyday carry, whether it's multi-tools or knives. You're not going to look like a dope with that. Jason, this is a big case. It's not well understood. I've actually been testing the waters this week because I want to know what people think. I want to know if most people are like me. I want to know if people think Ray Lewis killed that guy. And I've been asking people. I said, you know, I asked my boss, I asked my coworker. I said, do you think Ray Lewis killed that guy? And they're like, what, recently? And I'm like, no, back in 2000. They're like, yeah. You know, everyone just has this idea that Ray Lewis definitely killed somebody. But even Tansy the other night, I think it was Monday night or whatever, he was saying that, you know, he was letting everyone know that we were going to do this breakdown. And I said, you know, Eric, do you think he killed that guy? And he said, definitely. Jason, let me ask you, do you think he killed that guy?
I think he definitely was involved and had a hand in it. Now,
okay, hold on. I want to put a pause because I have just maneuvered you right where I want you to be.
Boom.
When you ask,
yes, master.
Don't call me that ever again. When you ask someone, did Ray Lewis kill the guy? And they say, yes, there's a problem with that. What's the primary problem? I'll let you know. This was a double murder. This is two people who were killed. So when you ask people, did Ray Lewis kill the guy? And they say, yes, they're telling you right away that they know precious little about it. And if I asked you, you know, who did he kill? Hardly anybody knows the name of the victims. We know that he was in a limousine that night. He was outside of the club celebrating Super Bowl 34, which he did not play in. That was the instant classic game. Rams, Titans, where the Titans almost had it at the last second. They were going to win their first ever Super Bowl, but a tackle saved the touchdown, and the Titans went home with nothing. This was right after they moved to Tennessee. They had just become the Tennessee Titans after many years as the Houston Oilers. But you talk to people about this, and they seem to not really understand what's going on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to name names. I'm going to go through everybody connected to this case. I'm going to talk about evidence. I'm going to talk about theories. I'm going to say who thinks what and why. But first of all, we've got to understand exactly what happened and why, even if you had been there, it might not be cut and dry whether or not Ray Lewis is a murderer. Jason, you're a fireman. You know nothing of the laws except when they're applied to you in the back of a police car. Felony murder is a concept that if you and someone else set out to commit a felony, a robbery or an aggravated assault or something with a weapon, and someone dies in the commission of that felony, even if you are not someone who pulled the trigger, you can be charged with felony murder. In Georgia, they call that being party to the crime, right? You're the getaway man. It's the way that they always describe it. If your buddy goes in there and robs a bank and you decided that you were going to be his getaway driver, no one gets killed. They're just going to go in and take money. You're an accomplice to a robbery, right? Well, if they go in there and they get nervous and they shoot somebody, you're a party to the crime. That's felony murder. You were set out to commit a felony. And if you were there and if you were participating under Georgia law, the statute of felony murder, you're involved. So the question is, in an altercation that occurred, if Ray Lewis is involved, what was his intent? Was he participating in the fight or was he trying to stop the fight? That's the legal extent that you need to know to decide whether or not Ray Lewis is a murderer. But let's finally go and start talking about our evidence. Unless, Jason, you have something that you want to chime in, because I did cut you off quite rudely.
No. I'm going to call you chess master again, because that's what you are. You led me in, but it was very hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that that was 24 years ago.
I know. Where did time go?
I know. It's like,
we had just survived Y2K when this happened. It was literally, we were just finally like admitting to we were trying to gaslight our friends into saying that all that doomsday prep we were doing was just a joke, you know?
But when you brought up wanting to cover this case, I was like, I think it's great. But then when I started looking at it, and when you put numbers down, we're in 2024, this happened in 2000. Holy shit. Yeah, where did time go? It's absolutely crazy to me. So I had to go back and refresh on, a lot of the facts. And like you said, you have to do a deep dive to get in to, I've seen some of your notes, obviously, before we started.
This is the deepest dive I've ever done.
you have done well already.
This is the most prepared,
but you've done well.
This is the most prepared I've ever been. And it is not to say that I totally knew that you would come to the show radically unprepared to deliver a long, lengthy story about the truth of Ray Lewis. The more I learned about this case, the more I got interested in it. And I'll tell you where I started from. I assumed that Ray Lewis didn't do it. I have this feeling, and this is maybe not, this is like a sort of a bias that I have, but I sort of tend to think that when famous people get caught up in shit, and I got to admit, again, I'm a little bit biased towards NFL players because I like football. I don't want to ever believe that football players can get into bad stuff, which is just ludicrous, right? I mean, Aaron Hernandez, the whole thing. around this time, I was getting ready to go to high school. Well, I was already in high school, but graduate and go off to college and go to criminal justice. And I believed a lot that the system works. But, we're going to find out that maybe the system doesn't always work well, and the system's based off of government. So I've got some detailed notes here that we're going to go through, and we're going to walk everybody right through the case. So without further ado, let's go through it.
Let's do it.
Started crime scene. January 31st, 2000, Atlanta, Georgia. The Cobalt Lounge, 265 East, what's that? Paces Terry Road in Buckhead Village. Buckhead Village is it's a neighborhood in Atlanta. So it's a specific suburb, a specific section of Atlanta. When the crime scene techs got there, they found people, cars everywhere, was a chaotic mess. Lots of people in Atlanta. The club scene does not stop at 2 o'clock like it does here. Jason, you got blue laws there in Ohio where the partying stops at a certain hour?
Most of our bars shut down at 2 o'clock. They have to be out by 2:30.
Okay. Well, these parties go all night. There's people that would go out to party in Atlanta and they would be going until 6 in the morning or when the sun came up. So let's talk about our suspects. So not present at the crime scene was Ray Lewis's limo. That was found at a Holiday Inn. Not far from the crime scene. Ray Lewis and the other six people inside the vehicle were not present. It had 7 bullet holes in it and a flat tire. Like I said, it was at the Holiday Inn. When police found it, it had a very telling Baltimore Ravens placard on the dashboard. So we know this is Ray Lewis's vehicle. Let's talk about Ray Lewis. He's a linebacker for Baltimore Ravens. Because of this incident, he would be indicted with 2 counts of murder and aggravated assault. He's friends with several other suspects, including Reginald Oakley and Joseph Sweeting. Those are our 2 primary suspects, although others are in there. Ray Lewis would say after this was over that being falsely accused was the worst thing that can happen to a person. I would say that being murdered is probably the worst thing that can happen to you because there's really no coming back from that. You can come back from being falsely accused. But
you lose that game every time.
Murder is forever. So what ended up happening? It's not a secret. It's not spoiling anything to say that he pled to obstruction of justice. He received 12 months of probation, and he paid a huge fine to the NFL, $250,000, which at that time was the largest fine ever paid by an NFL player that was not for substance abuse reasons. Now, I know what you're thinking. It's ridiculous that players have paid a larger fine for substance abuse. You got to remember the NFL is fining him for a misdemeanor, something that's less than a DUI, essentially, is this obstruction charge.
Yeah.
Why was he charged with obstruction? We'll get to that. Let's talk about the other suspects. Also present in the vehicle, Reginald Oakley. Reginald Oakley was indicted, 2 counts of murder, aggravated assault. Oakley was possibly intoxicated the night that this happened. He actually met Ray Lewis back in 1998 in Baltimore. Other people at the scene describe him as being very aggressive, very hostile. It's possible that he rushed one of the victims from the limo. It's not spoiling anything or ruining anything to let you know that he received a ruling of not guilty because of self-defense. So he was involved in the fight, which led to the death of 2 other human beings. Ultimately, they ruled that he was not responsible for that, that he was merely defending himself. His triple I is 26 pages. Jason, you know what a triple I is?
I don't.
Okay. That's all right. It's a cop thing. Interstate Identification Index. It's this federal rap sheet. It's basically a list of every crime he's ever been charged with or convicted of. 26 pages is long. This includes check fraud, ID theft, resisting arrest, assault with a deadly weapon, and an attempted murder in North Carolina, both of which of those last charges were dismissed by the prosecutor. So this is not a nice guy, this Reginald Oakley.
Would that be the same? I think from what I know, we have RCIC and an NCIC, regional and national.
Yeah, RCIC would be for Ohio.
Right. Okay.
Right. So NCIC is the National Crime Information Center. It's actually based out of West Virginia, not far from where you are. In case you ever wanted to win some bar trivia with that. Our other suspect, although we have a couple here, our other prime suspect, the other one that was indicted, that's Joseph Sweeting. He was indicted on 2 counts of murder and aggravated assault. Joseph Sweeting met Lewis in Miami back when Ray Lewis was going to college there for football. Joseph Sweeting, as we'll come to discuss here in a minute, is a very interesting suspect because he's the person who purchased the murder weapons. They, of course, did not fly into it Atlanta from Baltimore carrying weapons on them. What were the weapons, Jason?
Knives. I'll just tell you. Folding knives.
Folding knives, also called punch blades. These are weapons that are easy to conceal in the palm. They essentially turn into a knife between your fingers so that when you're punching somebody, you're actually stabbing them. They're remarkably similar to how you might fight with a shiv in prison, which definitely comes up for Joseph Sweeting. He purchased those punch blades in a Sports Authority store in Atlanta in a mall in Lenox with Ray Lewis's credit card. Ray Lewis was indeed there. His court ruling, of course, after a 5-hour deliberation, was that he too acted in self-defense. What else about Joseph Sweeting Well, his triple I is for grand theft. He's been previously charged with that. He's an enforcer for the Miami Boys gang. Distribution of crack, lots of weapons violations. His name has come up in about 10 to 11 homicides which have occurred in Miami, and he was in federal prison for 4 years for a felon in possession of a firearm. Lead detectives.
Upstanding individual.
Not that upstanding. Lead detective on the case believes that he was the person who was actually responsible for the murders. But let's talk about other people that were there, because we just don't know. There's another suspect in his party that sort of remains unidentified. Another person at the scene described him as a dark-skinned dude. He was armed with a knife. He was on Lewis's side. They said that he engaged in a fight. There's a couple of people that he could be. He could be Kwame King. Kwame King was present in the limo with Ray Lewis that night. Kwame King is a former teammate, high school football teammate of Ray Lewis. It could be Carlos Stafford. That's a Lewis acquaintance. It could be someone named Gino or Claudius. Those two men, we don't know too much about them. I did mention just now Carlos Stafford. He was named by Lewis as being involved in the fight. As I just mentioned, this fight happened and two people were left dead as a result of the fight. So if you're involved in the fight, Jason, that means that you're a party to the crime. That means that if someone's going to be charged with felony murder, they're essentially guilty of murder. So Ray Lewis has named Carlos Stafford of being party to this crime. Stafford has never even been charged with assault in this case. My guess for that reason would be if they weren't able to convict Sweeting and Oakley, there's no reason to go after anyone else because if Sweeting and Oakley weren't guilty of a crime, there's nothing to be party to. Finally, I mentioned Kwame King just now too. He also goes by the street name Fedora. He was in the limo. He says that Ray Lewis was not involved in any fighting at all. He was never charged with a crime, Kwame King. All right, so let's talk about the victims.
Let me get some clarification, just because some of the things that I looked at was Kwame King was that supposedly the driver?
No, I'm going to talk at length about the driver. You're going to learn a lot about the driver. The driver is our key witness. Also, I think it would be especially cruel if you had your high school football teammate driving you around once you're an NFL player. Doesn't he just mean?
Well, they all want to hang out anyway.
I mean, I guess. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about the limo driver and how he was treated and whether or not he was treated cruelly.
There were so many names. I was trying to keep track of who was who.
That's why I'm naming names, Jason, because when you ask people about this case, the only thing they can tell you is that Ray Lewis killed a guy. They don't even know that it was two people. All right. So we've talked about some of the people that were with Ray Lewis in the vehicle. Ray Lewis claims that his charge of obstruction of justice was because he didn't know the name of everyone who was in the limo with him when police asked. The truth is that there were seven people in the limousine with him. He knew each and every one of them. He says some of them he didn't know. I don't believe that anyone's riding around in his limo with him and he doesn't know who he is. He claims that the reason why he was charged with obstruction of justice was that he didn't give up their names. He did tell two names of the people in his limo to Atlanta Police Department. He gave away two aliases. He didn't mention anybody by actual name. Here's the thing. That is not the reason he was charged with obstruction. When he gave an interview to Dan Patrick and saying that his obstruction charge was about him not naming names of the people in his limo, that's not true. His obstruction charges was because he was not cooperative with police at all. And he lied about a lot of things going on. And the plea to a misdemeanor was essentially his way of having him return to practice so that he could go back to off-season practice and OTAs getting ready for the upcoming season. Because his trial was in May. So we're getting ready for everybody, all the teams to get back together and go back to conditioning and all that. And it's also a way to say something happened to allow Atlanta PD and the Fulton County Prosecutor's Office to save some face and to acknowledge the fact that, you know, the public indisputably knows that Ray Lewis was there and he was involved in some shady shit. So he pleads to a misdemeanor. People are kind of happy, like, well, he committed a crime and he admitted to committing a crime. But it has nothing to do with the fact that he didn't give away all his occupants of the vehicle to Atlanta PD. He just says that in order to get people off his back, because phrasing it that way, it's like, well, why did they charge him with that for not knowing the names of everyone in his limo? That's ridiculous, but it's not what happened. Let's talk about the other side of this, because this sounds a little bit like a gang fight. Let's talk about who's on the other side. About 40 people came down from Akron, Ohio. From your neck of the woods, Jason, I don't know if you've ever been to Akron.
I've driven through, never stayed.
So there's a record label down there. At that time, it was called the Flam Flawless record label. One of their primary rappers is a guy named Chino Nino. Have you ever heard of him?
I have never.
It surprises me because you're about the right age, and you are definitely someone who's into hip hop. So I don't know why you were not into Chino
Most
Nino.
Most definitely.
Perhaps instead, you know him as Jeff Gwen.
Oh, yeah, Jeff. Yeah, I know Jeff. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I was going to say. Other people in the group, Christian Holster, Jason Baker, Richard Lawler, Marlon Burroughs. Jason Baker and Richard Lawler are actually our two victims. Richard Lawler, a.k.a. Rich, stabbed at the scene, officially by persons unknown, although, like I said, the chief investigator for Atlanta Homicide believes that it was Joseph Sweeting. The other victim was Jason Baker, also known as Shorty. While in the fight, he hit Oakley with a champagne bottle and fought him. Jason Baker's blood was found inside Lewis's limousine. How did it get there? Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Who else do we have that's involved in this? I have so much in front of me. Well, okay. Let's talk about another key witness. Jeff Gwynn, also known as Chino Nino. In Atlanta, he was from Akron, Ohio. His 1998 album, Get Wet, came out. Are you sure you don't have that album in your record collection?
It is definitely not in my repertoire. I promise you.
So after the...
After this, though.
After Ray Lewis was arrested, and he was arrested within 6 hours of this fight being over. Like I said, the crime scene, the incident occurred around 4 a.m. Ray Lewis was arrested at the Holiday Inn around 10 a.m. the next day.
The fact that he's staying in the Holiday Inn is suspect to me anyway.
Well, you know, we'll... I don't, you know, maybe it's a really nice Holiday Inn. I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, Jeff Gwynn was a big rapper. His entire group of the label of the 40 people who from Akron, they were coming down there essentially to support and promote him. They're all going down to party, but it's also there to do some business to promote Chino Nino. This is a place where you can network and get connections and help your label grow. He told police straight up that he saw Ray Lewis fighting. And like I said, if Ray Lewis was indeed involved in this fight, then he is guilty of felony murder. But he later recanted this claim, saying that Lewis tried to help defuse the fight. He said that Ray Lewis's fame was a huge distraction to the investigation, and that had he never been involved, police most likely would have been able to secure convictions. He blames Oakley for being aggressive, for being drunk, for starting the fight, being belligerent, but he also blames Sweeting for being the one that delivered the fatal blows. An unknown witness came forward to Atlanta PD. This was a friend of Ray Lewis. This is critical because he would, this person who we don't know the name of, had a critical piece of evidence. They were able to prove that Ray Lewis purchased the punch blades and that the weapons were in possession of Joseph Sweeting because this unknown witness, who was already a friend of Ray Lewis, approached him at the Sports Authority and wanted to get Ray Lewis's new cell phone. So Ray Lewis says, let me get a piece of paper. Joseph Sweeting hands him the receipt from the Sports Authority that says, you know, two deadly weapons, you know, 1099 on it or whatever, writes his phone number on there. This unknown witness goes down to Atlanta PD, gives them the receipt saying, hey, this is proof that they purchased the deadly weapons, the murder weapons right here in Atlanta. And here's proof that it was right there with Ray Lewis. So one Lieutenant Mike Smith, who's in charge of Atlanta Homicide, decides that he's going to interview this unknown witness. So he sits him down and he asks the unknown witness his name. Guy tells him, Mike Smith says, what's your street name? The guy says, what are you talking about? I don't have a street name. Lieutenant Mike Smith says, all black people have street names.
Oh my God.
He even doubled down on it. The guy says, I don't have a street name, and I would appreciate it if you wouldn't, you know, basically just assume that, you know, I'm some sort of street mentality guy that has a street name. So Mike Smith doubled down on it. This witness took off. Our head detective, Ken Allen, who we'll talk about in a minute, tried to persuade him to not leave, to continue to talk to police. He apologized profusely for Lieutenant Mike Smith. Detective Allen, who was the head, like I said, the head detective on this case, the first on the scene, put in his official report that Mike Smith confronted him about his street name and doubling down on it about all black people having street names. And in fact, this would come up in the trial because, of course, that piece of evidence, that receipt saying that Ray Lewis bought these two punch blades is a critical piece of evidence. You can't just throw this receipt down and say, look what we got. You have to say how we got it, which means you have to call someone to the stand.
Yeah.
They called this witness to the stand. And on cross-examination, he mentioned that Lieutenant Mike Smith was a racist asshole, and that made the police look quite bad. But let's talk about Lieutenant Mike Smith of Atlanta Homicide. He's the boss at ATL Homicide. Lieutenant Mike Smith, within 6 hours, directed the premature arrest of Ray Lewis. He was not prepared for an interview. It was not a good time to have an arrest. When he sat down with Ray Lewis in the interrogation room, Ray Lewis did not have an attorney. And this is really the best time to figure out what the hell is going on, right? You got Ray Lewis there. He knows all the players. He was present.
Yeah.
He's of all the people that you have involved in this, all these Joseph Sweetings, all these Richard Oakleys, all these other people, they have nothing to lose. These guys are not high profile like Ray Lewis is. This is the time when they could have recruited Ray Lewis and said, look, we know you don't want your career to end. This is the time when you've got to say what happened. You've got to talk about your friends. Tell us what really happened. Instead, they arrested him and put him on defense right away. And Ray Lewis stopped talking. Like I said, he only mentioned two of the seven people in the limo, only gave aliases. So Lieutenant Mike Smith, kind of right off the bat, starting to biff the case. But let's talk about the guy that Lieutenant Mike Smith sent to arrest him. That's Detective Brett Zimbrick. Brett Zimbrick physically went to Holiday Inn and arrested Ray Lewis 6 hours after the murder. When he went to the hotel, Ray Lewis was on the phone with his mom and his agent saying, Mama, they're arresting me for murder. Detective Brett Zimbrick says, actually, we're arresting you for two murders. They took him into custody. And they say he didn't cry, but he said that he was pretty emotional about it. I think anyone else would be. Detective Brett Zimbrick wanted to wait. He said, it's only been 6 hours. We have no idea what's going on. This is a high-profile NFL star. He's not going to flee the country. He's not going to go play professional NFL football, professional football in Brazil. Everybody knows who he is. This is Ray Lewis. He was the first draft pick of the Baltimore Ravens after they moved. Very high-profile linebacker. He would go on to be a Pro Bowler. He would win the Super Bowl the next year. Everybody knows who this guy is. There's no reason why we have to worry about him being a flight risk. There's no way that he's going to disappear. He's on a contract for millions of dollars with the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah,
but
I mean, yeah, that guy's not leaving. He's not leaving town or the country without somebody knowing who he is.
But Detective Brett Zimbrick did what he was told by his boss, and he went ahead and arrested him at the direction of Lieutenant Mike Smith, who later said that I told him to go out and arrest Ray Lewis, and we interviewed him, and really nothing came of it, and I didn't really care what happened after that. So Lieutenant Mike Smith, not one of those super engaged lieutenants. Let's talk about our lead detective. This is Detective Ken Allen, Atlanta Homicide. Chief, you're a lieutenant, or you have been, or I don't know what the hell you are now, but you're a lieutenant. When you've got a big event going on, like let's say you've got a big Cincinnati Bengals game going on, you staff for that? Is that something you prepare for? You know you're gonna have parties and things are gonna get rowdy. You're gonna be ready for that, right?
Yeah, you would. I would hope that somebody would. Whoever is in charge. If I'm in charge, yes, I'm gonna make sure I've got proper and adequate staffing to take care of everybody that's around me.
For some reason, Lieutenant Mike Smith of Atlanta Homicide had one homicide detective working the night of January 31st, 2000. The Super Bowl is in Atlanta. Atlanta on a Sunday night, you're going to have more than one homicide anyway. He's got one homicide detective working. Jeez. Bunch of junior crime scene techs are there. He's the only one that's working. So Ken Allen is the first person to take the case. He goes to the scene, starts directing evidence collection. When the limo is found, they're able to determine that it belongs to Ray Lewis. They arrest the driver, who we'll get to in a little bit. But Ken Allen is the primary detective on the case investigating Ray Lewis. So let's talk a little bit about the evidence since he's there.
That is mind-boggling. That's mind-boggling to me.
That there's just one?
Yes. A huge metro department on any given day of the week. Atlanta. I've watched enough Cops and all these other shows. I'm not a police officer, but I've watched enough of these reality shows to see how busy Atlanta is, and I've been to Atlanta.
Yeah.
What in the actual fuck?
Yeah, one homicide detective. So Let's talk about some evidence. So there's a champagne bottle used in the fight. We talked about how one of the suspects was hit by one of the victims with a champagne bottle. Those pieces broke and were left behind. These evidence techs destroyed that evidence, threw it away.
No.
Great. Pieces of the bottle, you could put that back together. You could get fingerprints off of it. You get blood off of it. You could possibly get hair if it was hit into somebody's scalp. I mean, pieces like that might stick, particularly if there's blood and it gets sticky. Here's the thing. Ray Lewis that night was wearing a cream-colored or white-colored suit. Ray Lewis was dressed to the nines. He's out celebrating the Super Bowl. He's wearing a mink coat. He's got this nice suit on. But he gets involved in a scrap at some point. Ray Lewis, there's blood inside of his limo, and there are people who believe that his suit at some point was covered in blood. His suit that he wore that evening, according to his lawyers, was lost or at the cleaners, or it has never been found. The district attorney, of course, alleges that his date for that evening, one Jessica Robertson, who he met the week before at a party being thrown by Magic Johnson, destroyed his suit by throwing it into a fast food dumpster. She also took a photo of Lewis wearing that suit that same evening. This is back in the days where you actually had a camera, probably a disposable one, I'm guessing. The ones where you take it and then you wind it up, yep, and drop it off. That photo was burned. So at one point, he's wearing a suit. The suit gets destroyed. The picture of him wearing the suit, in case they ever find the suit, the evidence that would suggest that he was definitely wearing that bloody piece of evidence, also gone away for all time. We have no idea what happened to that suit. It was never recovered. That's a big piece of evidence right there. And if there's blood on his suit, it says he was definitely involved in the fight. You got to remember, Ray Lewis says that he never got out of that limo. So how'd the blood get on him?
He made the statement that I don't fight.
Yeah, he made the statement that he didn't fight. He said that he had never been in a fight since he was 13. Right. The detectives say that he had been in fights a lot more recently than 13.
And I agree. I mean, I can't believe that. Oh, I don't fight. If you're a machismo male in the NFL, a great college player, you're getting accosted, you're probably going to throw a punch or two. But when he said, I don't fight, these are some of the articles that I was reading. I don't fight. Okay. But anyway, continue, John.
I honestly think that he's completely full of shit. Some of the things that make me very mad about him is that in some of his interviews, he says, you know, to the families, I just want you to know there's no way that I would do this. There's no way I would be involved. God doesn't use people for his greatness like this. Have you read the Bible, Ray? King David like slept with some lady and then killed her husband so that he could get away with it. Jesus literally used Judas to betray him so that he could fulfill his purpose and redeem all of mankind. He literally used someone who set him up to get murdered to redeem mankind. Paul, who wrote the entire New Testament, also killed a lot of Christians. So literally God's using murderers all the time. Don't tell me that you're a good person. And so that means that that God's using you for his will. So that must have mean that you've never murdered anyone. The only people that God ever uses is murderers, apparently, if you read the Bible, right? Just throwing it out there that maybe the God that you claim to know might just not know you back. I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. That's none of my business. It's not between me and him. Let's talk about those punch blades, though. So they recovered a knife at the scene with no prints, no DNA on it. Two punch knives were used, and there's, like I said, these were purchased by Lewis at the Sports Authority in Lenox on January 30th. Lewis was there signing autographs. That's why he was over there in the first place. These are very discreet. They're able to be carried in the palm. These things are going to be pulled out and used in a flash. Why do I mention that? On both the bodies of Lawler and Baker, there are no defensive wounds. What does that mean? It means that they didn't get into a classic knife fight. It wasn't like one of the suspects pulled out a knife and it was slashing these guys. What happened was is that this was a brawl. This was fisticuffs in the traditional sense. But at some point, somebody took some action that led to a stabbing, and we'll talk about that. But there were no defensive wounds on either of these bodies. So let's talk about the investigation. Our lead detective, Ken Allen, believes that there was some problems with the investigation. Like I said, he was the only detective that was working that night. He's new to the team. He's a kind of a junior detective. So everywhere that he would go when he would try to interview witnesses, somebody beat him to it. Who are these people? And why were they there? Well, wherever he would go, there were two people that were there first, and they would describe themselves, or the people that they talked to said they were NFL security. So wherever the police department's going, they're being outmaneuvered or beaten to the punch by apparently agents of the NFL. So he goes to a couple places and he's going to talk to two witnesses in particular that have a lot to say but aren't saying anything. And he's beaten out by NFL security. So what's happening? How is NFL security finding out about what's going on in the Ray Lewis murder investigation? Well, I think that there has to be a mole in Atlanta PD. Someone in Atlanta Homicide was giving information to NFL security, because how else would they know? So Detective Allen laid a trap for him. Well, he was out of town, and I believe I know where he was, although it's just a guess. I have a feeling he was in Cleveland, because I'm going to tell you a story about that. He sent a supplemental report back to Atlanta Homicide saying, hey, we've got these two other witnesses who said they saw what Ray Lewis did that night. It was a trap, though. It was not really a real witness. So he sent this to Atlanta Homicide. He sent this to his coworkers. He sent this to other detectives. And sure enough, NFL security showed up at the appointed time and place to interview a non-existent witness, which proved that there was definitely a mole inside Atlanta Police Department that was feeding information to the NFL so that the NFL could run interference. Here's something else that's interesting from Detective Ken Allen's investigation. So they interview they arrest Ray Lewis and interview him within 6 hours time. It's pretty quick for a homicide investigation. You watch first 48, they resolve in 6 hours. That's quick turnaround. Of course, it's pretty easy when you fired Ray Lewis's limousine and it's got bullet holes in the back, which, by the way, the bullet holes came from Marlon Burroughs, which was a member of the Akron people that came down from Akron to support Chino Nino when he saw his two friends down on the ground stabbed as Ray Lewis's limousine peeled off into the night. He fired his weapon 7 times into the vehicle, obviously leaving quite a few holes in it and in the tire. So we know that Marlon Burroughs is the person that shot that vehicle. But when Detective Ken Allen went to go talk, to finally identify all the occupants of the vehicle, every single one of them already had a lawyer. Within 6 hours, they had Ray Lewis, which means within 6 hours, they pretty much had everyone else. Every single other person already had a lawyer. So you're going to tell me all these people in this car, these people, these nobodies hanging out with Ray Lewis, they can all afford a defense attorneys. How are they getting lawyers so fast? These are not public defenders. They haven't been charged with a crime, so they don't have a right to a public defender yet. These are private attorneys. Who's paying for all these things? Here's something else. Every occupant of that vehicle was supplied with a burner phone. Why? So that they could communicate with these people without that being trackable by authorities. You know,
where do you find this shit?
Cause I'm a 911. I'm a 911 dispatcher, Keith. I deep dive and I find shit out.
I am impressed. Cause I mean, I've deep dived in a lot of things, but I haven't gotten that deep. You are the man.
There's a reason why someone doesn't want you to know that these cell phones have been provided to every person in this limo. It's so they could coordinate everyone, telling them to shut up, lawyer up, get out of town, and don't talk to anybody. In fact, none of these occupants of the vehicle ever spoke to police or gave a statement, which is why it was so difficult to prosecute this case. Detective Ken Allen believes that there was an organization with more power, more money, and more influence than Atlanta Homicide that was supplying those cell phones. The Baltimore Ravens. The owner, as you may remember, at that time was Art Modell. He sold the team in 2004, but at this time, he owns the Baltimore Ravens. Did he supply the cell phones? Did he hire those defense attorneys? Detective Allen believes that it was either the Baltimore Ravens or NFL security. Either way, you have major sports companies, whether it's the league or the actual team, actively engaging in a counter investigation to stop Atlanta Homicide from investigating the case of two murders, which is insane. But let's talk more about the Baltimore Ravens, and let's talk about two more witnesses that draw another connection to the Baltimore Ravens. Couple witnesses at the scene, John and Bruno Di Siena. These guys own a restaurant in Cleveland called Bruno's Ristorante. I know that you don't like going up to the Mistake on the Lake, Keith, but I believe it's still there on 41st Street in Cleveland. If you wanted to ever go up there and meet.
I've actually been there.
You've been there. So
I have been there.
You've had chicken palm probably crafted in the preferred style of Bruno di Siena. John and Bruno di Siena, the restaurant owners of Bruno's Ristorante, were there in Atlanta that night. They were in the company of an interesting man by the name of Chester Anderson. Let's take a brief pause on the di Siena brothers to talk about Chester Anderson. Who the hell's Chester Anderson? Chester Anderson is someone that approached Atlanta PD and said that he was with John and Bruno di Siena. They're having drinks. And all of a sudden, John says, hey, Ray Lewis is kicking somebody's ass. Which, like I said, everyone knows who Ray Lewis is. John and Bruno di Siena are avid Cleveland Brown fans, so they're seeing Ray Lewis play twice a year. But everybody who's an NFL fan in the year 2000 knows who Ray Lewis is. But who's Chester Anderson? Chester Anderson is someone that likes to go to parties, pretending to be a former NFL star so that he can get into those parties. He's a professional imposter. He's a con man.
Shitbag.
Here's the problem. He goes forward to Atlanta PD and says, hey, John di Siena said that Ray Lewis was outside kicking somebody's ass. I don't know if Chester Anderson saw this in person. I'm guessing he was if he was eventually called out the witness at a trial, which he was. But as you can imagine, Chester Anderson, being guilty of identity theft and impersonating people very often, was impeached very strongly for his incredibility on the stand. The defense attorney said, like, you want to believe this man? He's a professional liar. He's constantly impersonating people. You can't trust him at all. Why did Chester Anderson have to say that? He gets on the stand and he says this, you know, that's my ruse. I pretend to be NFL players to go to parties, but I've been found out. The whole world knows who I am. They know what I do. I'm pretty much screwed. The smartest thing for me as a fraud would to be to not talk about this. I could ignore this. I could say, I don't know nothing. I didn't see nothing. Yep. But I care about the families and what happened. And I think even I have a line. I say murder is wrong. So someone's willing to go forward and talk to police and tell the jury that what they saw was a murder and that Ray Lewis was involved, that Ray Lewis was fighting, that Ray Lewis is a party to the crime of murder. As like I said, he was impeached on the stand for his credibility. Nobody believed him. Also appearing on the stand was Chino Nino, the rapper. Chino Nino, who originally told police that Ray Lewis was fighting, gets up on the stand and he says Ray Lewis was tussling, which is some sort of physical engagement that's less than fighting. It's easy to say he was tussling with someone, trying to get them to separate, trying to stop the fight. So Chino Nino gets on the stand. And in so doing, Chino Nino lost a lot of street cred. I don't know a lot about the hip hop world, and neither does Jason, because he's never heard of Chino Nino, who at one time was the biggest rapper in all of Ohio history back in the year 2000. Chino Nino lost a lot of street cred for cooperating as a witness, but he also lost a lot of credibility within his own followers. You got to remember, two of which got killed because he refused to name Ray Lewis as the man that participated in their murder. There's a lot of people still in Akron to this day who hold Ray Lewis responsible for that murder. A lot of people believe that it was him alone that was doing it. And Chino Nino, like I said, lost a lot of street cred for both participating and not naming Ray Lewis. So he's kind of got screwed twice over. Chester Anderson, you know, also he got outed as a fraud, professional con man. But he tried to do the right thing and go forward. But, you know, when Chino Nino's changing his story, when Chester Anderson's changing their story, jury doesn't believe him. But let's talk about the di Siena brothers. Let's go back to that. Those two guys from Cleveland with the restaurant. They're there and they're in the company of Chester Anderson. They see Ray Lewis fighting. Who are the di Siena brothers? Well, we just said that they're restaurant owners, but they're also the former executive chefs and caterers for the Cleveland Browns before they moved to Baltimore. Do you know what that means, Keith? It means their boss was Art Modell. The boss of Ray Lewis is the boss of these two witnesses. So they too initially said that they saw Ray Lewis participating in a fight. And when Detective Ken Allen goes out to Cleveland to meet them, he sits in the restaurant. They have some food. They're waiting for Bruno to come out. Finally, they get to go back to the office. And who's walking out of that office? NFL security. Beat him to the punch. NFL security.
I have a question.
possibly working for Art Modell, went and talked to John and Bruno Di Siena before Atlanta Homicide could talk to him. Go ahead.
Chino Nino, how do you spell that? Is it C-H-I or C-H-Y?
C-H-I-N-O. There's a lot of rappers with the name Chino. I know it's right. Difficult. C-H-I-N-O and then space N-I-N-O. But his name's also Jeff Gwen, last name George William Edward Norr.
I was just trying, while you were talking, I was trying to pull up like Instagram or any of his socials.
I believe that he's still on there.
Chino Nino Brown.
That's him.
All right, so this fucking clown on Instagram right now has 5,776 followers.
He's about as many as me, I guess.
I don't know. So he's not a huge, you know. So
well, you got to remember this was
me not knowing who he is.
Well, this was 2000 and it was a long time ago. And like I said, he lost a lot of street cred because he got up there and was state's witness.
No, I'm gonna make sure I definitely, this is a very sarcastic, download his shit on Apple.
Check out some of his music. I think I think he's had albums out recently, so don't call it a comeback, but this guy might be coming back.
I'm not doing it.
Who else have we got? So there's one more huge witness that everyone agrees saw everything. That's the limo driver. He's the key witness to everything. He's the key to this entire case. Let's talk about him. His name's Dwayne Francis Fassett. He's a limo driver. He's a Vietnam vet. He's a retired medical doctor, worked in the emergency room. He was Ray Lewis's driver for a long time. I know Ray Lewis had only been in the NFL 3 or 4 years at that point, but he'd driven for him because he was a preferred driver. He was driving for him for a while. He was paid very well. He received a lot of special treatment. Ray Lewis was taking care of his family. He loved Ray Lewis, and I think that went beyond just his appreciation for him as a football player. Atlanta Homicide catches up with him. They find the limo. They find the bullet holes in it. They find him struggling to find someone who could change a tire on a vehicle without asking any questions when it's got bullet holes in it. Not going to ask questions about the Baltimore Ravens placard that's on there. So they initially take him into custody because he's in possession of the vehicle that's got bullet holes in it. He believes that he's going to be charged with the crime, and he doesn't say much. And so his first story is to not say very, very, very much to Atlanta Homicide because he thought he was going to be charged, which frankly is smart. Then he talked to a guy named Assistant District Attorney Clinton Rucker. Who's ADA Clinton Rucker? Clinton Rucker works in the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. He's the person who interviews Dwayne Fassett. That's the most important thing about him. He gets Dwayne Fassett into an interview room outside of the presence of Atlanta PD, and he records an interview with him. This piece of evidence we will call the Fassett tape from here on out. In this initial interview with ADA Clinton Rucker, Fassett implicates Ray Lewis directly. You have to remember that Dwayne Fassett's whole financial future, his hope of a job, everything's tied to the future of Ray Lewis. If Ray Lewis goes to prison forever, that's it for Dwayne Fassett. He's not going to be driving a limo for an NFL superstar anymore. This is going to affect his family. He's going to lose the cash cow, but he also loves and respects Ray Lewis for whatever you want to say about it. Like he views this guy as a close friend of the family. So he gets in there, ADA Clinton Rucker interviews him. At various points, Fassett breaks down and cries. He says, this is the hardest interview I've ever had to give, hardest thing I've ever had to do. But he basically says that at one point, these two guys, Oakley and Sweeting, are fighting with the two victims. And Ray Lewis grabs one of the victims. You got to remember, he's this huge linebacker, massive man. Everyone else there is smaller than him. And pulls back his arms. Why, though? Well, this is where it comes in. This is a critical question. What's the intent? Is Ray Lewis there to hold back a person from swinging punches at his friends? Or is he there to hold open his arms and expose his chest so that a knife can descend into that person's heart and then again into that person's kidneys? If he's holding back his arms and he knows that a knife's coming, that's homicide. That's premeditated homicide. He's essentially grabbing a guy back so that he can be stabbed.
I agree.
We're no longer talking party to the crime. He's an active participant in first degree murder. We don't have to sit here and split hairs about simply being party to a crime, being present, being in on it. He's holding somebody back so they can get stabbed, according to his own driver, Dwayne Fassett, who had everything to lose by saying these words. Everything to lose by talking about that. So in this recorded interview, like I said, he said he saw everything from the limo. He gave a complete account. He said that Lewis punched a man in the center of the upper chest. He said that when that was over, Ray Lewis and the others jumped in the vehicle. He said that Lewis ordered everyone to shut the hell up. Shut the fuck up is what he said. Get the hell out of town. He was mad at them for endangering his career. When asked on the tape, Dwayne Fassett said that no one expressed any remorse or concern about the victims. That Ray Lewis was, like I said, angry at everyone.
Wasn't there a quote saying, "This is all going to fall back on me. Shut the fuck up."
Yeah, that's exactly what they were concerned about. They weren't concerned about anybody's lives or anyone dying. That's some real criminal indifference about some people there. But I think it says a lot about Ray Lewis that in that moment where two people have been cared, the only thing that he cares about is himself and his career and making sure that he stays clean. So the prosecution obviously called Dwayne Fassett to the stand as a key witness. He would be on the stand for 3 hours and 37 minutes on day three. He was on the stand for a long time. Prosecution got up. This district attorney, Don Samuel, who is not an ADA, he's the actual elected district attorney of Fulton County, who had not tried a case in 10 years. He had not been in a courtroom to try a case in 10 years. He's talking to him for most of that day. Now, there are other attorneys, obviously Oakley and Sweeting. They all have their own attorneys, as does Lewis. So you've got a prosecutor and essentially three defense attorneys. I'll ask you questions about what you saw. That would exhaust, enervate anybody, but particularly when you don't want to be there, when you don't want to be testifying against your boss and friend, Ray Lewis. And when you're already receiving death threats and things like this, and you're wondering what's going to happen to your family, it's terrible. The defense attorney for Ray Lewis cross-examined him for exactly 2 minutes. And he said words to this effect. So after the prosecutor gets up there and asks all these feckless and ineffective, illogical, stupid, wandering questions, the defense attorney for Ray Lewis gets up there and he says, "Did you at any time see Ray Lewis do anything to be involved in this fight or hurt anyone in any way?" Dwayne Fassett says, "No, sir, not to my knowledge. I did not see that." The end. There's no more cross-examination for Dwayne Fassett. So what needs to happen now? Well, if the attorney, this Paul Howard guy, I think I said Don Samuel before, it's Paul Howard. Paul Howard, the district attorney, like I said, he hadn't tried a case in 10 years. This guy's been a politician forever. He's trying this case because it's a political opportunity. This is on ESPN every single day. This case does not involve any of his constituents. No one from Atlanta is involved in the crime. Ray Lewis from him and his group is from Baltimore, Miami, elsewhere. The victims are all from Akron, Ohio. There's nobody there in Atlanta that's involved in this case, and he can go out there on the world stage and he can secure a prosecution for himself and help him secure election victory for years to come. This is his OJ. This is what he's going to get.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's typically not the way that works, to where the district attorney tries a case. It's normally your assistant DAs. He'll be there for support and everything else on the back end, but you typically never see.
Yeah. You'll see an executive ADA, some top ADA, someone who actually tries cases in court, somebody that can go out there and actually get a conviction. This guy has done that before, but it has been 10
years
since he's done this. I can't do anything that I haven't done for 10 years and go out and do it well. And this guy, Paul Howard,
that's why I don't run.
Who's the uncle of basketball legend Dwight Howard, just for more sports connections. He has a golden opportunity here. And what's that? So Dwayne gets up on the stand, says, "I didn't see shit. I didn't see anything." This is what he should be doing. They have this tape in evidence saying that of Dwayne Fassett, the Fassett tape saying, and he saw Ray Lewis getting involved, but he saw Ray Lewis punch someone in the chest. If Ray Lewis has a punch knife in his fist when that happens, then it's Ray Lewis sinking the blade. This is the clear and convincing evidence. This is the testimony we need to secure a conviction. And Dwayne Fassett's just committed perjury. He's lied on the stand. He's sweating. He's crumbling. He's a shell of a man. He's under pressure. He's under all those lights. Everyone in the world's watching him on court TV. Ray Lewis is there, sitting in the courtroom, staring at him, and he folds. District Attorney Paul Howard should have said this. And Mr. Fassett, isn't it true that during the initial investigation, you talked to my colleague, Assistant District Attorney Clinton Rucker? Yes, you should say that. And this happened, you know, Atlanta homicide on or about this day and at about time. Yes. And isn't it true on that occasion that you made a statement to Rucker, which was on tape? Yes. And is it or is it not true that the statement that is on that tape is that you said that you saw Ray Lewis attacking someone? Is that true or not true? If he says yes, I made a statement, he's impeached his credibility. The jury can wonder about why he might be saying what he's saying on the stand now. And he admits that he saw Ray Lewis punch someone. So the jury will hear that Ray Lewis assaulted somebody, possibly stabbed him, possibly a party to the crime, possibly guilty of murder. Instead, Paul Howard does none of those things. Even if Dwayne Fassett had denied it and said, no, I did not say that to Clinton Rucker. No, that's not on tape. Now you've laid the framework, the groundwork to say, Your Honor, I'd like to have introduced as evidence the tape from that day where he talked to Assistant District Attorney Clinton Rucker. And yeah, I would like to play that for the jury. And that way the jury would hear him say it either way. He'd either have to admit it in court that Ray Lewis stabbed this guy, or he'd have to hear the tape from when he's breaking down and crying and admitting on tape that Ray Lewis assaulted this guy. So either way, the jury's going to hear it. District Attorney Paul Howard absolutely poops the bed, does not do that. Does not confront him on that, does not attempt to impeach his credibility, does not attempt to lay groundwork for the introduction of evidence that Dwayne Fassett has already gone on record to say that Ray Lewis is guilty of perpetrating an assault, perhaps murder. So Dwayne Fassett, after 3 hours and 37 minutes, is understandably very tired of being cross-examined. He's told he's excused. He looks relieved. Then one of the lawyers says, I would like permission to keep him under oath and that he may be recalled as a witness. Judge Bonner says to him, just so you know, you could be recalled as a witness anytime. He completely deflates. In fact, it's almost so humorous when everyone in the gallery and the jury sees him collapse from being completely destroyed by the fact that this isn't over for him. He can actually be heard on the courtroom, can actually be heard on court TV laughing at him because it's so hilarious that the guy thinks he's over and done with. And I'm just not done with this yet. So I know what you think happened, that obviously they brought him in the next day and they started to cross-examine him and impeach his credibility and get the tape brought in into evidence so the jury can hear the true story of the limo driver who saw it all, who has everything to lose by telling the truth, but told it anyway. Dwayne Fassett disappeared.
He get Epstein'd?
No. ADA Clinton Rucker was leaving the office, and he got called to have a private meeting with the defense attorney. The defense attorney says, this case is over. Clinton Rucker's like, the hell it's not. I'm going to call Dwayne Fassett back up on the stand, and I'm going to have him account for the fact that he lied on the stand, and we're going to get this tape introduced into evidence, and the jury's going to hear that your man Ray Lewis stabbed this guy. He says, right now, Dwayne Fassett is on a plane to another country. Here's a note from his doctor saying he is emotionally and psychologically too damaged to continue in this trial, which is an amazing feat of lawyering. It's an amazing feat of doctoring. You have to remember Dwayne Fassett's a former ER doctor. He was also in Vietnam, which this has to just show you, though, that he was in Vietnam. He's an emergency room doctor. The guy's used to emergencies, death, stress. This thing, watching Ray Lewis murder someone, is the thing that broke him psychologically. He could not continue. He was stressed out under these conditions. And I'm not saying he was never stressed out as an ER doctor. I'm not saying he was never stressed out in Vietnam, but this is the thing that made him finally flee. He gets on a plane. He disappeared. He's unfit to continue. Where's he now? Well, I presume he's back in the country, but Dwayne Fassett has had a serious and debilitating stroke. And he has never spoken publicly about what happened that night in Atlanta ever again. I am
so impressed with your
team. I'm not even done yet.
I know. Thank
you. I'm so good. So we said that he said he saw Lawler being assaulted by Lewis. He said he saw the blows land. Everything's tied to that testimony. He didn't get properly impeached. But I've just got some fun facts for you. Don Samuel represented him. Don Samuel also represented Donald Trump very recently on his case down in Georgia when he was also booked into Fulton County Jail. You may remember that iconic photo. Don Samuel also went on to represent Ben Roethlisberger in 2010. No charges for Big Ben. He was arraigned on a misdemeanor plea deal where he also never faced any criminal charges for the rape allegations that were made against him. Ray Lewis probably took this deal of this misdemeanor so that he could resume his career. He was probably pressured to do it by the NFL and the Ravens so that they could save face. He ended up testifying against the other two guys, Oakley, and now I'm forgetting the other guy's name. But what was interesting about it is that he turned state's witness for this plea deal. Sweeting is the other guy, Oakley and Sweeting. And what happened was is that attorneys for Oakley and Sweeting, instead of taking on Ray Lewis and saying that Ray Lewis was a liar and that Ray Lewis was as involved as anybody, that really would not work to their interests. So they were able to take Ray Lewis's testimony that Ray Lewis was trying to break up a fight, and they were able to spin it so that they were leaving the club that night, that these guys from Akron started a fight, that one of them was drunk and belligerent, hit Oakley with a bottle, and that they were just trying to get out of there and trying to protect themselves. And that's why Oakley and Sweeting got off of this with no charges at all. They actually got less than Ray Lewis.
Yeah, they got fucking acquitted.
Because it was self-defense. Yeah, they got acquitted of double murder and aggravated assault. And so now you know what really happened. You know names. You know who was involved. You know who. You know when. You know why. You know how it all went down. So you have to decide for yourself, was Ray Lewis involved? Was he holding back those arms to stop a fight? Or was he holding back those arms so that a knife could be plunged into somebody's body? His behavior, not open, not transparent. If he had been trying to break up a fight and things turned deadly, you'd think that he'd be more cooperative. He was not cooperative at all. In fairness, the police department never even tried to interview him without him being arrested. The first time they talked to him, he was under arrest. Ray Lewis never got to say his side. They could have easily had Ray Lewis saying what was going on without Ray Lewis being afraid for his career at any point, or less afraid. Obviously, once he's under arrest, he's totally afraid. But it was too late at that point, and because of the way that the case was managed and mismanaged and the way that Dwayne Fassett disappeared, officially, those cases are unsolved. And Ray Lewis goes on to say the saddest thing is that still nobody knows who killed those kids. And it just makes me sick to hear that, because no, we know who killed them. Your friends were acquitted. They said it was self-defense, but that they definitely murdered them. That it was a justifiable homicide, that they killed in self-defense. So it's not a mystery who killed those guys. We know it was your buddies.
Right.
Under the law, they're right. Not.
He writes his biography and then goes on this book tour and says that I'm doing this. I took the plea deal and I paid the families because I can't bring those kids back. But God told me that I've been blessed.
I need to throw
those blessings out to other people.
No. No, that settlement happened before that they could take him to civil court. We've talked about this before on various Failure to Stop shows, that the standard for guilt in a criminal case is beyond a shadow of a doubt. Ray Lewis barely got out of that. He took a plea because he thought it might be very likely that not only would his career end, but he could be going to prison for life, because he had no idea if Dwayne Fassett was going to be recalled to the stand. I don't think he could have guessed that Dwayne Fassett was going to go nuts and leave the country. I don't think you could necessarily say that was going to happen. If Dwayne Fassett had the courage to tell the truth, or if that district attorney had the professional adroitness to get evidence properly introduced into a trial, or if ADA Clinton Rucker had like knocked his boss over and said, Your Honor, I have some critical evidence that we have got to get in here. Ray Lewis would be in prison to this day, but Ray Lewis would never guess that happened. So we've talked about that being beyond a shadow of a doubt. Well, what's the standard in a civil court? It's preponderance of evidence, right? Let's go back to OJ. OJ was acquitted, not guilty of murder, but he was still sued in civil court and he was found guilty of a wrongful death suit. Basically, the judge in that case decided it was more likely than not that OJ Simpson was guilty of the wrongful death of Nicole Brown Simpson and that other guy. So he did. So he proactively went to the families before a lawsuit could be made to further clean this up, to further make it go away, and use his blessings to help out these families. All the smoke show. It just shows you how poor these people are, though, that they didn't say, no, we're definitely going to take you in front of a court and we're going to have it declared to the world that you are guilty of participating in the wrongful deaths of these two guys. You know, they didn't have the courage to say, we're going to have our day in court for them. Unfortunately, it was about whatever undisclosed sum of money or whatever settlement that they got. So the truth never had its day in civil court either. Unfortunately,
I think each family, one guy's fiance got $1 million and then the other guy's grandmother got $1 million,
which is chump change to a chump guy change. Like him.
That's in his ashtray of his fucking Bentley or whatever he's driving.
Yeah. Jill says I would make a good attorney. I don't know if you know this, Jill. Probably not, because why would you have an intimate detail of my personal life? But I was actually pre-law in college by accident. I didn't know this, but when it was time for my senior year and it was time for me to go have an internship, my student advisor is like, well, you're pre-law, so you're going to law school after this. It only makes sense. Let's go get you in with a law firm as an intern. And I said, I don't want to be a lawyer. Why did you think I wanted to be? You've had me trying to become a lawyer this whole time. How many classes should I just take to become a lawyer that I didn't have to do? Because I never wanted to do that. So I picked up some lawyery stuff. I'm not exactly a Rob Herking, but yeah, I've seen every episode of Law and Order to kind of help make up for that as well. So,
oh shit.
Thank you. I might be kind of an attorney.
I think you should be.
If there's nothing else, I hope that you guys feel informed, feel educated, feel like you at least you can talk about what went on with Ray Lewis. Is it tremendously relevant? No. But at least now when someone makes a joke about Ray Lewis killing a guy, at least you can actually name the victims. You know that there were two of them. You know who else was involved. You know also who else was in the limo. You know there were seven other people there, one of whom was also armed with a knife, as identified by Chino Nino as possibly being involved. We don't know if that was Kwame King or if it was Carlos Santos or whoever, but there's other people that could be involved, and there's other people that probably should have been charged with the crime, but because those two got acquitted, there's no reason for them to go forward in pursuing this. So the families didn't get justice in the criminal sense, but they got that money. So Ray Lewis, of course, is a free man. Is he already in the Hall of Fame? I mean, he retired in 2012 as the last remaining original Baltimore Raven, so I assume that he's probably in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I believe he is.
Thank you all for listening. Appreciate you. Next week, Jason Kiefer is going to break down an intimate, disgusting detail, the case of Ben Roethlisberger and what really happened in that bathroom. He's going to have the lowdown on that. Well, thank you for joining us on this unusual episode of Illegal Shift. We'll be back next week to talk about all the interesting Dallas Cowboys free agent moves. We have signed our long snapper. Got long snapper for next year. Thanks everybody for listening. Guns up, giddy up. Good night, America. Bye, Jason.
Bye, John.
I love you.
I love you more.
Bye. Bye.